Okay, let's get started with today's message. Back in the day, Gene and I served at the Grand Lake Community Chapel. And somewhere around 1986, Gene and I were in charge of Vacation Bible School. And we used a company called Cook Publishing, and they made these Vacation Bible School programs that had everything in them. They had all your teaching materials, they had music, they had crafts for the kids. Everything you needed was inside the packet when it came. Well, this particular year, they were going through Old Testament Bible stories, and one of them was the story of a guy named Naaman. And they had a song that the kids loved. It was really cool. It was, and it kind of went like this: Naaman, go and soak your head. Now, what does that have to do with anything? Well, it made the kids laugh a lot. They loved that song. But while preparing for today, because we're going to talk about Naaman in today's message, I started to think about what that phrase, go soak your head, meant. Back then, it was just a way to make the kids laugh. Was there something more to it? So I did some checking up, and I found out that the phrase, go soak your head, was originally used on sailing vessels to imply, dude, you're not making any sense, so go dip your head in the ocean and cool down a bit, because you need to humble down and make sense, because you're just not listening and you're really not a part of the conversation. Today, it kind of means you don't know what you're talking about, get away from me. Well, in its earliest form, go soak your head, again on naval vessels, had to do with that primitive form of punishment that was called keel hauling. If someone did something and they needed to be punished and they didn't want to kill them, they'd tie a rope to them, toss them off the ship, and kind of drag them in the water. And of course, water's going in their mouth, and it was really a horrible experience. If they were up close to the boat, there were barnacles on the bottom of the boat, they might hit that and get, you know, cut or whatever. And the idea of keel hauling was to get them to rethink what they're doing and to humble themselves, get rid of the pride, and conform or come into conformity with whatever it was that the captain or whoever was wanting them to do. So literally speaking, the phrase go soak your head means you need a lesson in humility. And what does that have to do with what we're going to talk about today? Well, we'll get to that in a minute. But first, I want to jump into the story of Naaman so you're fully informed. And it comes from 2 Kings chapter 5, verses 1 through 19. So Naaman lived in what would be considered present-day Syria, and he was under the king of Aram, and he was the commander of that king's armies. And he was a great man, a mighty warrior, and he had had many great victories. And so he was pretty high up there in importance. But Naaman had a problem. He had leprosy. Now, leprosy back in the day didn't necessarily mean just leprosy as we know it. Leprosy could have been any kind of skin discoloration or skin disease. So we don't know if Naaman had leprosy like we know it, but he had some kind of skin condition. It could have been eczema, seborrhea, psoriasis, something on that line as well. But evidently, this was a problem for him to have this disease. So he had a slave girl in his home. Now, there was a lot of war going on between Israel and Syria, or Assyria, or Aram at the time. And every once in a while, the Syrians would send raiding troops into Israel to ransack a community, and part of the ransacking would be to capture their people and make them slaves. Well, Naaman's wife's slave was an Israelite, and she knew that her master, Naaman, had a skin condition. And so one day she said, why doesn't my master go to Israel? Because there's a prophet there who can heal him. And so Naaman, wanting to be healed, went to the king of Aram and said, is it okay if I go to Israel and talk with this prophet? I'm told that he can heal me. So the king actually wrote him a letter and sent him over to the king of Samaria, or the king of Israel, and said, I want you to heal my commander of my armies, Naaman. And so he left, took a whole bunch of stuff. The Bible says that he took 750 pounds of silver, 150 pounds of gold, and 10 sets of clothing, all to act as a payment so that he could get the healing that he was looking for. So when he gets to Israel, he goes to the king of Israel and gives the king the letter. The king reads the letter, and he's all upset. He tears his clothes and says, "How am I going to heal this guy? I don't have that power." And of course, with the battles that were going on back and forth, he was afraid that that was going to cause this international problem, and the king of Aram was going to come and attack them. So when the prophet Elijah, who was alive, now we're talking somewhere around 850 BC, that's the time frame that all of this happened. And Elijah had been the prophet in Israel, and then Elisha took over. And when Elisha heard that the king was all distraught over this, he sent word to him and said, "Just send him down to me. I'll take care of him so that he knows that there's a real prophet in Israel." So Naaman went with his horses and his chariots, a great big show, and he waited at the front door of Elijah's home. Now, it doesn't say in the Bible how long he spent sitting in front of his home, but I think that it was probably a long time, and I think you'll agree with me as you come to understand what Elijah was doing. This great man, this warrior who had this great entourage, you know, a military entourage, was left sitting in front of Elijah's home, and I'm not sure what kind of home Elisha had. Most prophets weren't really rich. They lived rather humbly. So here comes this great warrior, had been sent by his own king, had been received by the king of Israel, and had been sent out and ended up in front of this shack. And he sat there, and he sat there, and he sat there. Well, here's the deal. He didn't even get to speak to Elisha. Elisha sent his assistant, his servant, down and said to him, said to Naaman, "This is what you need to do to be healed. You need to go down to the Jordan River and you need to dip yourself in the Jordan 7 times to be healed." Well, if you know proud people, Naaman was very upset. "I came all this way," he thought, "to talk to this prophet. My king sent me. His king received me. I come here. He lives in a shack. He didn't even come out to greet me. And now he's telling me to go dip myself in the Jordan." And in fact, this is what Naaman said in response. He said that, "In my land, don't we have the rivers of Abana and Phophar? And aren't they better than any rivers in Israel? Why shouldn't I go into them and wash and be healed?" And he went away in a total rage. But his officers saw some wisdom here. And so while they were going away, they started to reason with Naaman, trying to talk him into going and dipping himself in the Jordan. I mean, what's there to lose? It may work. For whatever reason, Naaman eventually agreed. And it said that Naaman went to the Jordan River and dipped himself 7 times as the man of God had instructed. And his skin became as healthy as the skin of a young child's, and he was healed. You know, sometimes for us to really need and want the power of God in our lives, we need to be humbled. And I'm sure that that's what Elisha was doing in the case of Naaman. He knew that Naaman was a great man, and so part of his ploy, the reason that he didn't come down and speak to him himself, is he knew that this man needed to be humbled, because proud people struggle with God. You know, Psalm 10:4 says this, "The wicked person is too proud to seek God. In all his thoughts, there is no room for God." So Elisha knew that Naaman needed to be humbled, and he sent him down to do a very humble thing, to dip himself 7 times in the very humble River Jordan to be healed. There was no great show. There was no great audience and a miracle from heaven with, you know, stars and bells and whistles and all those things. It was just a very simple process. But here's the deal. Naaman came back to Elisha after he had dipped himself in and said, "Now I know that there is no God in all the world except the God of Israel." You see, Naaman needed to be humbled, not just to be healed physically, but to be healed spiritually as well. And so then he said to Elisha, because remember, I told you they brought all these things, these treasures. And he said, Elisha, I want to give you a gift for healing me. And another time, Elisha was able to humble the great Naaman and say, no, thank you. I don't want what you have to offer. What I give to you freely, because God has given to me freely. And so again, Naaman was humbled in this story. So the story of Naaman soaking his head is a story of humility. The phrase, Naaman, go and soak your head, has everything to do with a lesson in humility. By not coming out to meet the great warrior, by telling him to go soak his head in the humble waters of the Jordan River, and by not accepting Naaman's payment, Elisha was forcing Naaman to humble himself before God so he could be healed. But moreover, so Naaman could discover God. Because again, remember what Psalm 10 verse 4 says, the wicked person is too proud to seek God. In all his thoughts, there is no room for God. So Naaman humbled himself before God and he was healed. But moreover, he discovered God. And humility is vital, according to Psalm 10:4. It's vital for discovering God. So with the need for humility in mind, humility is what go soak your head implies in this story. Go humble yourself before the Lord so you can see him and not only be healed physically, but healed spiritually as well. Let's turn to our notes for today's message, and you can find them on the Bible app on your phone or even online. You'll find them underneath the events tab, and under that you'll see Discovery Fellowship. If you just click on that, it will come up. Those notes are only going to be available up till noon today, and so if you're not able to follow them now because you're watching this on your phone after the service, you can still get on there. You can access the notes, and if you save them to your phone, you'll have access to them throughout the week. So what I want you to know today in your notes is, number one, Naaman came for physical healing, but God had a spiritual healing in mind. Number two, I want you to know that Naaman needed to humble himself before he was able to discover God. Number three, greater humility prompted Naaman to have greater faith. That's so important. It takes quite a bit of humility to admit that we're not right with God, and to need to accept the fact that Jesus died on the cross for us. That's a humbling experience. But humility can go on and on and on. Naaman was humbled when Elisha wouldn't come out and meet him. Naaman was then again humbled when he was told to go soak his head in the Jordan River. And then he was humbled even more so when Elisha would not accept the elaborate gifts that he brought to give him. So greater humility prompts us to have greater faith. And because of his humility, number four, in the end, Naaman was healed both physically and spiritually. So here's the big idea for the day. Until we humble ourselves, we will struggle to have real faith. Again, let's go back to that verse from Psalm chapter 10, verse 4. The wicked person is too proud. Now, let's not key into the word wicked. Let's key into the word proud. We can probably pull out those words, the wicked person, and put anything in there. You can even put someone's name. George is too proud to seek God. Whether he's wicked or not, whatever reason, he is too proud to seek God. The proud people who are proud, struggle to even think that they need God because they have everything in their minds that they think they need. In all their thoughts, it goes on to say, there is no room for God. So in the heart of a proud person, there's no room for God. And that is a sad, sad place to be. And even people who are new in Christianity, who are just fresh in their relationship with Jesus, who have gone through that humbling experience of saying, I need to be forgiven by God, there's more humility that's needed for you to be able to discover, trust, and follow Jesus and grow more in your walk with Him. Humility is a good thing. Humility is something that we should be seeking, because with more humility comes greater faith. True humility leads to true faith. And true faith allows us to discover Jesus' love, trust His lead, and follow His example. Once we're in that kind of faith place, and that's a good place to be, there is where the healing begins. You know, there's a beautiful song out there. It's been on the charts for a while. It's from 10th Avenue North, and it's called Healing Begins. This is where the healing begins. Well, I'm going to rephrase that and say, humility before God is where healing begins. This is where healing starts. When you come to where you're broken within, the light meets the dark. The light of God meets the darkness within us when we humble ourselves and actually need God in our lives. You know, the first time I told you my story of being healed from bladder cancer, I was focused on God's healing powers. If you remember, I had been diagnosed with that and had gone back to the urologist, and they were doing some further tests, I guess you could say, to try to determine exactly the course of action that they were going to take. And while they were checking my insides, there was no growth. There had been a growth there a couple of days earlier, then there was no growth. And it was kind of funny. The doctor was like acting really like, what is going on here? He even walked out of the office, I'm sure, to go back to his computer to look at all of my x-rays and whatever other pictures that were there that showed that growth, to see if it was there and if he had read those correctly and if the professional people who read that stuff had read it correctly. And he came back and he left and he came back. And finally, he was scratching his head and he said, there's nothing there. So when I walked out to the waiting room, because I had to be sedated, so Jean was had driven me and she was out there waiting. So when I walked out, I had tears in my eyes. And I think that for me, it wasn't a celebration of the healing. It was probably, why was I worth God doing such a great miracle? And so then I walked out into the waiting room, and I was standing there with tears coming down my face. And I said, they looked and there's nothing there. And Jean was reading a book and she looked up and said, yeah, I know, I've been praying, and looked back down and kept reading. And in that moment, that was a great big dose of humility for me. And that dose of humility has rechanged my life. I, since that moment, have been more humble before God than ever before, and I'm here to tell you that I've never walked more closely with God. Why? Because true humility leads to true faith, and greater humility leads to greater faith. And I hope and pray that you discover newfound humility in your life so that your faith can increase. The less you need you, the more you need God. And humility is what takes us to that place. So to help you out, I've got a couple of next steps I want to share with you. Number one, as always, reread today's Bible verses. Look at Kings chapter 5, verses 1 through 19. That is today's text, and I would encourage you sometime this week to read that or listen to it being read. Number two, pray that God will humble you more. You know, it all starts with turning to God and saying, God, would you humble me more? And you may think that you're a pretty humble person. I know that, you know, before bladder cancer, I thought that I was pretty humble, but I found that there was more humility to be had. And I think that that's probably true for all of us. And all of that begins with letting God open your eyes. And greater humility brings greater faith. Number three, would you do a one-week humility challenge with me? Every day this coming week, if you accept the challenge, you are going to put yourself last in every circumstance. If someone says, hey, who wants to go first? You don't raise your hand. and you wait to go last. If someone is pushing and barreling their way to the toilet paper aisle because we heard that there's toilet paper there now and you really need some, you let that person go first. In every circumstance for an entire week, work on putting yourself last and everyone else first. That is humility 101. If it's dinner time and there's two steaks on the plate, two people ready to eat, and one steak looks like it's cooked perfectly and it's just the way you want it, and that person wants it, let them have it. You take the other one and be blessed. Finally, watch your faith grow, because I'm here to tell you, read the story of Naaman with humility in mind. Pray that God will humble you more. Do the 1 week humility challenge. I'm here to tell you, you can then stand back and watch your faith grow.